the request was to talk about the things about Shabbat, things which are in the spirit of Shabbat. It's one of these things which is actually a little difficult to put your finger on it. I'm going to try to explain it now according to at least one of the commentaries. Okay, now the first thing I want you to know is that what I'm going to say now is not necessarily according to everybody, but I want to give like one line of thinking and then we'll see how it ends up impacting. Because I know the way that some people have the suspicion is that anytime there's something that your rabbi doesn't want you to do on Shabbat, even though it's allowed, he says, okay, it's not in the spirit of Shabbat. Or anytime your parents don't want you to do something, it's not in the spirit of Shabbat, and so on and so forth. So where did this come from, and what's really the category that we're talking about? That'll be the topic for today. So I'm going to talk in general terms.
On Shabbat,
we can call it Uvdin D'chol as well. But what makes something that? Now, the truth is, there are some things the Gemara tells us, from some specific things. I want to get a bit broader than that even. And first, I want to make a general observation. On Shabbat, we have 39 melachot. There are 39 things that you can't do on Shabbat, and that we all knew, you knew that before I said that. And therefore, theoretically, if a person doesn't do any of these 39 things, then they kept Shabbat. Or I can go one step further, they kept Shabbat properly if they didn't do any of these 39 things. Now, the question is that really the case? So, let me ask you an example, and we're going to deal with this example a little bit. If I keep my store open on Shabbat, right, did I necessarily break one of the 39 melachot if my store is open? So if you start thinking about it, which law did you break by keeping your store open? So even if you want to start and say money, well, money is muktzeh. I'm allowed to give money on Shabbat from the Torah. Torah didn't say anything against money. On a Torah level, I could take money, hand it to somebody else. It's true that I don't make a contract on Shabbat because then I don't make an acquisition because then I may make a contract. I don't buy something because then maybe we'll make a contract. But all that's drabanan. Maybe I'll break one of the 39 melachot by writing something down. Money itself is not against the Torah law. So therefore, who was the one who made up this law that you can't keep a store open on Shabbat? Close. Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu said, and it's in our first source, in Tashiv Mishevet Raglecha, Asot Chafatzecha Biyom Kodshi, right, to do your things on my holy day, Asot Chafatzecha Biyom Kodshi, V'karata L'Shabbat Oneg L'Kdosh Hashem Mechubad V'Chibadeto Mi'asot Drachecha, Mimtso Cheftzecha V'Daber Davar, Az Titanag Al Hashem. She says, over here is the source, not to keep your stores open on Shabbat, not to do chafetzacha, not to do your things on Shabbat, that you should be resting from those things. So over here, you know, let me ask you in a very simple question, and this is a general question you can ask about many things. What gave him the authority to say such a thing? Isn't this adding to the Torah? 39 things you can't do on Shabbat. How can he add to the Torah and say you also have to close your store? Now, it's not an asmachta. An asmachta is where you find a Torah, something written in the Torah, and you say, no, this applies to something, which we may have had on tradition. Where does he have the right to come and tell us, well, listen, I know that I can't cook, I know I can't do shechita, I know I can't plant, I can't plow, I can't... Who said I can't keep my store open? Why is he making Judaism harder? Why is he giving us more things that we can't do? So now the truth is that that's a very fair question. But we know on the one hand that the rabbis have an authority of protecting the law. So I want to frame this question and say this is how I understand it. There's a letter of the law and there's a spirit of the law. The letter of the law is not to do 39 melachot. What's the spirit of the law? To have a Shabbat. So what if you kept all the 39 melachot or you stayed away from all 39 melachot but you just didn't have a Shabbat? You didn't have a Shabbat because you're again, you didn't break any laws, but you just don't have a Shabbat. Your store is open. Right, you're doing business all day, and Shabbat is no different from any day of the week. You didn't plant, you didn't plow, you didn't do any of those things, but you didn't have Shabbat either. So I think that the place that the rabbinic laws come in, the Dinei Drabanan, the place the rabbinic laws come in is when somebody is keeping the letter of the law, but breaking the spirit of the law, then the rabbis, they make the letter of the law broader. They broaden the letter of the law in order to protect the spirit of the law. I think that's more or less how this works. Now, according to one of the Rishonim, this may very well be a din in Torah. Now, when I say one, I don't mean that there aren't others as well, but I just want you to see the formulation, the way it's written in the Ramban. The Ramban is in source number two. And the Ramban, and this pasuk actually is talking about Chag, Yom Tov, and not about Shabbat, but along the way he'll say, no, this certainly applies to Shabbat as well. But people can barter. I mean, there's a lot of bartering. You have chickens and I have wool. So, okay, I'll trade you one for the other. I mean, I think that even before there were stores, bartering always took place. You always had people who had different things. So you were allowed to do that on Shabbat? Yes, you're allowed to do that on Shabbat. From a Torah law, you can do that. But you're right. As we have more and more stores, then there's more of an issue. Okay, so look at the Ramban. Yelachem Shabbaton. By the way, notice this is not an Isur Milacha, Lo Ta'aseh Kol Milacha. It's not a prohibition, don't do work. What does it say? A positive thing. Yelachem Shabbaton. You should have a rest. Shiye Yom Shvita Lanuach Bo. You should have a day of rest that you can rest on that day. V'amru Rabotenu Shabbaton Asehu. So again, the Rabban understands this is from the Gemara already. This is, again, the source is in the Torah, and the Gemara says a black and white. You should have, there's a mitzvah taseh, aside from the 39 malachot, lo taseh malacha, there's a mitzvah taseh, Shabbaton. V'nei ha'osa malacha b'yom tov, ovir b'lav ve'aseh. Somebody who does work, again, I told you, the verse is written by Yom Tov. Somebody who does work on Yom Tov, not only did he break the lo taseh, he also broke the taseh. Not only did he not do what he was supposed to do, he did what he shouldn't do, he also didn't do what he should have done, which is to rest. V'hashovet po mikayim aseh. Somebody who rests on Shabbat fulfilled the positive commandment. He quotes a little bit of Mechilta Re'iti B'Parshat Chodesh Rishmartem at the Yom Hazeh Lama Nemar V'lo Kfar Nemar Kol Malacha Lo Yaseh Bahem Ein Li Elo Dvarim She'ein Mishum Malacha. Why does it have to say you should rest? It already says not to do Malacha. So this includes things that are not Malacha. Dvarim She'ein Mishum Shvut Minayin Talmud Lomo Rishmartem at the Yom Hazeh Lavi Dvarim She'ein Mishum Shvut. There are certain things that you cannot do on Shabbat on a Torah level because you're not resting. By the way, do you all recognize, so who figures this out? It's much more difficult to put your finger on it. Who decides now, oh, that wasn't resting, or this was resting? To define the Lamed Tet Melachot, the 39 things of work, that's very easy, or relatively easy. Skip a little bit to where it's underlined a little further down. He says, I understand from this Mechilta, from this Gemara, that we're obligated on Yom Tov not only not to do work, but other things as well. Lo sheyitrach kol hayom limdod hatfuot ulishkol haperot v'matonot u'malei chaviyot yayin. A person shouldn't spend the entire day exhausting themselves. And he gave a couple of different examples here, measuring, weighing, and so on, filling a barrel. Or moving things from one place to the other. And if you had an eruv, that if you had an eruv, so then you could, again, exactly what I said before, you can have the entire marketplace filled up, waiting for business to take place. That the entire situation of commerce in that city would operate just like a regular day. Here's where we add Shabbat. Shabbaton. Sheyom shvita umnucha lo yom torach v'zeo perish tov v'yafeh. So it's nice. The Ramban says, I like what I just now wrote. This is a sign for the malachot that you need to have a day of rest. V'acharechenu iti mechilta acheret achriti, the mechilta of the Rashbi, sheshanu baloshon acher ein li elo malacha shechavim al mina chatat malacha shein chavim al mina chatat binayin shein olin bi'ilan v'lo rochvim agabi be'ima v'lo shatin apnei yamayim v'lo mispakim v'lo metvachim tamud lomer kol malacha. So he says that, how do I know I can't do all these things? I'm not going to go on a list of all the things that he listed, but all the things on his list are not Torah laws, they're all rabbinic laws. How do I can't do all these rabbinic laws? Because it says I need to rest, not to do it, aside from not to do. It's not just melacha you can't do, kol melacha. What's kol melacha? It's other things as well, not just our melachot. And then in the next paragraph he writes, v'nei huzaru ala melacha, V'nei huzharu ha'al melachot b'shabbat b'lav v'onesh v'karet u'mita v'hatrachim v'amal ba'asei hazeh.
So here's where the Ramban stretches and says, this is true of Shabbat as well. Shabbat, you know you can't do melacha because there's lo ta'aseh melacha. But why can't you do these other things which are exhausting? Because it says Shabbat. Now, did everybody understand what just now happened? We know that there are things you can't do, Torah law, because it's melacha. The Ramban just now told us there are other things that are not quite melacha that you can't do either. But then he paints for us a situation. The situation is an extreme situation. The extreme situation is what he's afraid of, or what he thinks the Torah is afraid of. What's the extreme situation? That the marketplace would be filled, a person would occupy themselves all day with work. Now, here's where I want to ask a question. Is this mitzvah taseh, to have a Shabbat, does it apply, I don't know exactly how to phrase this, does it apply to individual actions or does it apply to the totality of the day? Which means, can there be one little thing that you do and if I did that one little thing, that's it, I didn't have a Shabbat? Or is it, as he said, then all day you would be involved in this? Which means, is the problem over here that I'm going to pack up my donkey, bring all my stuff, bring it to the marketplace and have my store open? Or is it the same problem if I go to my next door neighbor and trade them an apple for an orange? Was that also whole? Suddenly I did business, which means is there a difference over here between trading an apple for an orange on Shabbat versus having my store open and trading apples for oranges?
According to
this, what I'm asking is how do I understand this mitzvah taseh shel Shabbaton? Let me rephrase it. Does the mitzvah taseh shel Shabbaton, you should have a day of rest, does it apply to individual actions or does it apply to the totality of the day?
There is a point of the
That's an excellent point. But again, I'm still asking, when I'm going to make applications of this law, how will I make applications? If I do one little thing, did I just now, okay, I didn't have Shabbat today? Or do I not look at it that way? So we're going to see this question that I'm asking now is actually debated among the various mefarshim or poskim. You know what? I'm going to bring you an example of somebody who doesn't speak directly about our problem per se, but our problem is what bothers him and scares him. Skip all the way to page number. Sorry, you have no page number. Source number 7. Rav Moshe Feinstein. Somebody asked him, this is his grandson. He asked him, am I allowed to use a timer on Shabbat? Okay, one second. Why is that? If I have a timer for my lights, I'll have lights on Shabbat, I'll be able to see my food by the table. If it's hot outside, I'll have the timer go on the air conditioner and I'll be able to sit in the living room and I'll enjoy the Shabbat. I can argue that all these things are going to give me a better Shabbat. So if you see number 7, Melacha hana'aseit b'Shabbat al yidei sha'on Shabbat, right? And this is from Kaf Tevet Tov Shin Lamed Zayin. Right? And he says, and he writes it to his grandson. Hine b'dvar sha'al yidei chashmal inyan ha electri, if shar al yidei moresh sha'ot ha'naseh lakach shimidu b'erev Shabbat, ba'ofen sheyadchil levashel l'machar b'yom ha'Shabbat kisha'a lefnei zman achila. Okay, by the way, I'll give you a practical example now. Anybody here like coffee? Am I allowed to set a coffee percolator to make coffee on Shabbat? Before Shabbat, I'll put in the coffee. Before Shabbat, I'll put in the water. Plug it in on a timer. Shabbat morning, I'll wake up. My coffee will be ready. Am I allowed to do the following? Can I put before Shabbat, a second before Shabbat, can I put on a fire? Cover the fire. Don't cover the fire. I don't care now. Can I put a pot of food which is not cooked at all and will cook on Shabbat? Can I do that? There's actually about, it's for the problem with the cooking is a whole other reason. Okay, let's go back again. How do you break Shabbat? I need to do it, right? We talked about this last time. We need to do an action, have intention, and have a result. Over here, when did I do my action? I did my action before Shabbat. Before Shabbat, I put something on. I didn't do an action on Shabbat. What did I do on Shabbat? I didn't do anything. I ate the food on Shabbat. So you can say, oh, no, but it cooked on Shabbat, but I didn't do the action on Shabbat. You're missing one important thing. What one important thing you're missing to say it's not allowed? What's the one important thing? That I have to do something. I didn't do anything. How can I be guilty if I didn't do anything? So I can say, no, there was one slight difference between my examples. I just want to go back and explain this case a little bit better. If I put food on an hour before Shabbat and it's not cooked yet, then there's a rabbinic law that I may come to start stirring it and fixing it and adding and taking it away, which means if it's completely cooked before Shabbat, I can put it on. If it's not cooked at all before Shabbat, I can put it on. The problem if it's in the middle. So I'm saying that's a technical problem. But can I put food which is completely not a chamin? Right? Can I put a chamin on a second before Shabbat? It's not cooked at all. Yes, I can put it on the next morning. It'll be cooked. I can eat it. When did it cook? It cooked on Shabbat. So, over here in my question about the clock, before Shabbat, I put the water in. Before Shabbat, I put everything in. Right? But, you're right. It's going to cook on Shabbat. But cooking on Shabbat is not a problem. So what did I do? I put on before and I put on a timer. So did I do something wrong? By the way, before you go any further, the Chazon Ish, who's normally very, very machmir, Chazon Ish allows what I just now said. Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't. Now, the question is why he doesn't allow it. He says, no, absolutely not. And I'm not going to say, I don't want to exaggerate, but this he sees as the beginning of the end of Judaism. Okay, I put words in his mouth, and I got carried away a little bit. But look what he says. He wants to know, can I do such a thing? Again, that's the exact example. Can I put something on which is going to cook on Shabbat? Right, that's his example. That what he was asked. Be'erev Shabbat, ba'ofet she'edchil v'ashelu machar b'yom haShabbat kishalof nezman achila. Can I put something on a timer that will cook and be ready for on Shabbat? That's when it's going to cook. So he says. It seems to me, pashut sha'asur. It's obvious to me that it's not allowed. Pashut sha'asur la tirze, dere ade mareh sha'ot by a Shabbat clock, kizeh yuchlim lasot kol melachot b'Shabbat. Because if you do this, you'll be able to do all the melachot on Shabbat. Uvechol batei hacharashot, and all the factories. He even writes factories in English, in Hebrew also. Ve'ein lecha zilzul gadol l'Shabbat mizeh. You have no bigger way of destroying the Shabbat than this. What bothers him? Rav Moshe Feinstein understands in 1977 that we're moving towards automation. We're moving towards situations that you push a button before Shabbat, you push your factory, and at the end of Shabbat, you have 5,000 new pairs of pants, 5,000 new whatever you want. You didn't do anything. He said, no, but you were working all of Shabbat. I'm going to say it again. And what did you do? I would ask Rav Moshe, what did I do? I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. How can you tell me that it's not allowed? I just didn't do anything. So Rav Moshe, as I said, he's not going for this. He doesn't want to hear about this. He then goes on and he says, and by the way, that's just so obvious. Ein zilzul Shabbat yoter gadol mizeh. You're not going to have a Shabbat. Ubarur. Now listen to this, because this will drive some of you crazy. Some of you will say, oh, he's right. And some of you say, how could you say such a thing? Ubarur she'im hayazeh bizman atana'im v'amoreim. It's clear that if such a possibility existed during the time of the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Tana'im, v'amoreim, hayu osrim zeh, they would not have allowed it. So he says the only reason that there's no prohibition against this is because the Chachamim didn't know about it. Had the Chachamim known that you could push a button before Shabbat and after Shabbat you can have a whole factory producing things for you, there's no way they would have allowed. By the way, on the next page, I have another tshuva for you where somebody says, if the rabbis didn't say it's not allowed, you can't say it, you can't start making up new things. Somebody else who wrote it black and white, you can't go start making up new things. And by the way, to him it's just so
blank.
To him it's black and white. That's what's interesting, it's black and white. Had the Chachamim known about it, if you read then, the next line, he says, "Kimosha asru amira la'akum." The same way that the Chachamim said, "You can't ask a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbat," and then he says, "Vigam ulai hu mimela bichlal isur zeh de asru amira la'akum." Maybe this is included in saying that you can't ask a non-Jew. So this is a very interesting line. What is he saying? That why can't I ask a non-Jew? Because a non-Jew is going to do work on Shabbat. So what's included in that gzerah? That work should not be done for a Jew. So if work should not be done for a Jew, he said maybe when the Chachamim said you can't ask a non-Jew, it includes a golem, or if it includes a factory,
and he says, "The asru kol malacha naasit bishvil Yisrael mitzad amirat Yisrael, v'koshke mitzad maaseh Yisrael." So he says, maybe, you know, if a Jew did work on Shabbat, you know, that he make use of that work, at least on a rabbinic level, although that's a worthwhile topic to discuss. Let's say a Jew broke Shabbat on purpose, whatever, then you can't use it on Shabbat. Of course, this is a little different because he didn't do it on Shabbat. He did something before Shabbat. But what he's arguing then, if a non-Jew did work for a Jew on Shabbat, you can't use it on Shabbat. So he says, okay, if a Jew did work for a Jew on Shabbat, you can't use it. If a non-Jew did work for a Jew on Shabbat, you can't use it. So what do I understand from that? That the Chachamim did not want work done on Shabbat. So what difference does it make? Again, this is his argument. What difference does it make if it was done on Shabbat, if it was done before Shabbat? So I'm just pointing out, Rav Moshe's big argument, really here, he said it. Ein lecha, what was the exact words that he used? Ein lecha zilzul gadol Shabbat mizeh. Shabbat's a day of rest. If I can sit at home, yeah, I don't go to the factory, but my factory is working all day. If I can sit at home and just watch my factory, look at my watch every half an hour. Okay, I just made some more money. I just made some more money. I just made some more money. He's saying, what kind of Shabbat is this? It can't be. He's arguing that it just can't be. Now, again, you can still argue. Now, it's very interesting what he does next. What he does next is he allows the Shaon Shabbat for lights and for nothing else. It's one of the, there are a number of different reasons given. That's one which they argue, which is a very difficult argument, because Ein Shlichut Dvar Veira, and so on, and Ein Shlichut Lagoy, and so maybe, as I said, it's a strange kind of Shlichut. If it is because of the Shlichut that you're having somebody be your emissary, it's a difficult argument to make even by the non-Jew. So again, I just want you to see how hard Rav Moshe is working to say, I don't like this. At the end of the day, well, two conclusions. One, at the end of the day, he allowed it for lights and for nothing else. And at the end of the day, nobody listens to him. When I say nobody listens to him, people will put on their air conditioner. My father once asked Rabbi Soloveitchik if you're allowed to put on a clock on a dishwasher. He said, fine. Yeah, no problem with it. Although I will point out that it's more difficult today. Because today, the way dishwashers work is that they're electronic. Today, if you don't close the door, they're not going to work. Could be that was true those days as well. So my father knew a little bit about electronics. What did he do? He fixed the door in such a way that it would work even if you didn't close it. Because otherwise, closing it is part of, I mean, it can work, at least a gourmand, maybe more. So of course, we flooded the house lots of times because somebody forgot to close the dishwasher. It would work no matter what. But again, the basic question wasn't, can you close the door? Now, I said, that's a side question and an important question. But the question was, are you allowed to set up a Shon Shabbat on the dishwasher? So I'm saying, Rabbi Soloveitchik said, absolutely yes. Again, it's the same line of thinking as the Chazon Ish. What's the line of thinking? You do something before Shabbat. It has a result on Shabbat. Fine. Now, why didn't they say, no, it's the same thing as the factory? What was really the difference there between the factory and between the dishwasher? This is a very good example. Right. So what's the difference?
Money.
Not just money. What else is the difference? Why is this in the spirit of Shabbat? That's not in the spirit of Shabbat. What's the difference? By the way, I can ask you another question as you're thinking, working on that one. Am I allowed to ask a non-Jew who works for me to wash my dishes on Shabbat? Yeah?
Yeah.
What if they put on the dishwasher? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Why? Because they're doing it because they don't want to work so hard. For you, it makes no difference. They're allowed to wash the dishes one way or the other. It makes no difference. It's good. But you know what it really comes down to? One of them helps to enhance your Shabbat, and one of them doesn't help your Shabbat. You're going to say, hold, I made money. My Shabbat's better. No. One of them, in a tangible way, made your Shabbat better, and the other one has nothing to do with Shabbat, his business. So you say, okay, now where do you draw the line between this? So you're with Moshe.
That's where a kosher switch follows you.
Okay. We're still on that? They're going to track me down still. You got to stop. So if you think about it now, why, as I said, for Rabbi Soloveitchik, when I asked him, can you put a Shon Shabbat on a dishwasher? He said, of course. Why did it even begin to bother him? Why? Because this helps your Shabbat. Why can I put on my air conditioner, my heat, whatever? Because this helps my Shabbat. So essentially, anything which helps my Shabbat, I can argue why I should do it. Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't want to say this. He wanted to say, as we saw, had Chazal known about this, they would have prohibited it. Why? See, this in my mind, even though he doesn't exactly say, he says Zilzul Shabbat. This goes to my mind about the issue of the spirit of Shabbat. There are certain things that if you allow them to happen, you're going to be destroying Shabbat when you let them happen. You're not going to have a Shabbat. So anything which is going to help your Shabbat,
would be around, would be allowed. Something that doesn't help your Shabbat shouldn't be allowed. So it becomes very simple. Can I put it on my television? No, that doesn't help my Shabbat. That makes it like any other day. It doesn't help Shabbat. You can start proving how it doesn't help Shabbat. On the other hand, having heat helps Shabbat. Now, Rav Moshe, he allows it for lights. Why does he allow it for lights? So he's really stuck in his own example, and that's what allowed him to be lenient. He said, and this, I think I discussed this a couple of weeks ago, Rav Moshe based himself on two things. One is really what's the conclusion of the Gemara, on the one hand, and on the other hand, he based himself on what do people do? What's the custom? So he says in Europe, the custom was that if, let's say in the shul or other places, the lights went out, you would ask a non-Jew to do it. So what was his reason to say you can't put a Shon Shabbat on, you can't put a Shabbat clock on? It's because he says it's like telling a non-Jew to do it. But there are certain cases they were lenient. So when were they lenient? They weren't lenient when it came to anything having to do with business, but they were lenient when it came to lights for the shul, or lights even for a house, maybe for Kavod Shabbat. So he says, well, if we're lenient to ask a non-Jew in those cases, then we should be lenient to have the Shon Shabbat as well. So he ended up allowing the Shon Shabbat only for lights and for nothing else. And I'll say it again, I don't believe that most Ashkenazi Jews in America who saw Rav Moshe when he was alive, Moshe Feinstein, as being the really most important posek, I don't believe they followed him on this. He lost on this. He lost. But just because he lost, I don't want you to not appreciate where he's coming from. Where he's coming from, he saw the situation today better than anybody else saw it then. He saw then, again, 1977, he says, you will have automation, it will be running your lives, and it will destroy your Shabbat. And I want to put the line right here and say, had the rabbis known you could do such a thing, they certainly wouldn't have allowed it, and that's enough for me. And maybe even, well, his secondary point was, maybe even when they said that a non-Jew can't do work, you can't do amirah, you can't ask a non-Jew, maybe it's maybe the Shon Shabbat's included in a non-Jew. And the first time you hear that, you say, that's crazy. And you say, hold it, it's not so crazy. As I said, he lost, but where exactly do you draw the line? I would say you draw the line as far as business, versus, or enhancing Shabbat versus things which don't enhance the Shabbat or take away from the Shabbat. Now, will you all agree with me that this is very difficult to give an exact definition of where you put this, where you draw the line? Okay, so I agree. This is unbelievably, it's unbelievably difficult, and I'll go one step further. This is really the job of the great rabbis. You heard the word great just now? This is really the job of the great rabbis in every generation to point their finger and say, this should not be done, and this is fine. And as we know, great rabbis may not agree with one another. Let's go back. I have a website. I have a website which sells things. I have a website that somebody can sell things on Shabbat.
And you can order from
the future. Right. Look, I have books. It's not through my website. I have books that people can order through Amazon. Okay, so Amazon sells it. It's already their thing. They're contracted out, so it's not my problem. But if I had my own website selling my books, it may be a problem for me to keep it open, and I would have to worry about the timeline. It goes back to the timeline, which I wanted to talk about today. It goes back to an issue of the timeline. I would have to not allow anybody within a timeline where it's Shabbat. Yeah, to fake the IP address to be able to, to get to it anyway. Okay. So let me give you one example.
No, this, you can close for 2 days.
For 2 days. So then you're keeping Sunday also, or Friday for the Muslims. Okay. So let me give you another example or application of this, which is really a radical application, but you'll understand where it came from. I'm going back to a situation in Europe. It was a situation in Europe. As they moved out of what was called the shtetl, the little towns, where, in those small towns, for the most part, people kept Shabbat. As they moved out of the little towns to bigger cities and so on, then Shabbat observance began to break. This is happening in the 1800s or so. And people start to keep their stores open. Now, the first generation of people who keep their stores open are people who are still trying to keep Shabbat. Or at least they're claiming they're keeping Shabbat. When I came back to America after being 3 years in Israel, I went with my father. In Israel, I used to pray by the Vatikin, right? The early minyan, and go and pray. And there are a lot of places, you see the people, the kind of people that go to the early minyan. Just as the sun comes up, they pray. These are special people. So I go with my the regular shuls, and in America they start very late on Shabbat, 8:30, 9 o'clock, 9:30. So my father was a rabbi of a shul, and they started 9 o'clock, but it was very late. So even he would go pray earlier. So we go into this minyan, a little bit closer. We're going and praying. I'm looking around at all these people. I don't know what it was. They didn't look like the holy people praying early. So afterwards, I said to my father, I said, it was a little different from the people who go to the early minyan. So he laughs. He goes, I said, what's so funny? This Shabbat morning. He goes, they're all going to work today. He goes, again, we don't have this anymore. We lost this generation. Maybe you still do a little bit. We mainly lost those. People who would work, who would go to shul on Shabbat, listen to Kriyat HaTorah, go to the early minyan, and then get on the train and go to Manhattan and go to work. What happened is, either their children became very religious or their children left everything. No, they were not able to make a second generation of doing the same thing. Do you understand what I'm saying? There was no second generation of keeping it exactly the same thing. It either became more or became less, went one way or the other, but nobody stayed like that. Nobody stayed at that exact place. The Chatam Sofer was dealing with the same kind of situation. People opened their stores, and maybe they said, I'm not writing, I'm not this, I'm not doing this, I'm not breaking any Torah law. So he came out, like a cowboy, guns blazing, and he's taking them down. The Chatam Sofer, because what does he say? That if you let people starting to open their stores, what's going to end up happening? Say goodbye to Shabbat. So if you want to take a look at the Chatam Sofer, he's found on source number 3. Source 3, the second page. We have different sources for today. Did anybody send them to you? So the Chatam Sofer, Nidrashti Lasher Sholani. Sorry, we'll start from here. From the second line, which is underlined. Imapoteach Chanuto b'Shabbat, Umocher v'lokeach imhu b'chlal mechalalei Shabbat. O im yesh l'chalek bein poteach Chanut, kulo orak miktzato. Do you hear what he's asking? What's being asked of the Chatam Sofer is if somebody keeps their stores open on Shabbat, do they have a status of a Mechalel Shabbat Beferhesia? Now stop a second. A public desecrator of Shabbat. Normally, to be considered to be somebody who publicly desecrates Shabbat, what do you need to do? Somebody who breaks Shabbat. How do you break Shabbat? What are the 39 types of work? Lametet Melachot. He's asking, if I keep the Lametet Melachot, but I'm breaking Shabbaton, I'm not resting on Shabbat. I have my store open. Am I considered to be somebody who's Shomer Shabbat? Or am I considered to be a Machalel Shabbat Beferhesia? So what does the Chatam Sofer say in this tshuva? He quotes the Ramban word for word that aside, right, we saw the Ramban, that aside from not doing the 39 levels of work or types of work, you also need to rest, a day of rest. And what was Rabban's example? Otherwise, somebody will pack up their donkey, pack up their stuff, take it to the store, and so on and so forth. So what does the Ramban say? Sorry, what did the Chatam Sofer say? And this is a leap. He says somebody who keeps his store open on Shabbat is Mechalel Shabbat, which is remarkable. How could be Mechalel Shabbat if I didn't break Shabbat? It's remarkable. But what does he say? He's breaking. If somebody who broke the mitzvah taseh, Shabbaton, Tishbot, rest on the seventh day. If you didn't rest on the seventh day, you were Michalel Shabbat. It's true you don't get the same punishment as somebody who did one of the malachot. He says you broke Shabbat. So as I said, it's a remarkable thing. Now, do I really divide between this Chatam Sofer and the time and the place that he wrote it in? No. Obviously, there's a situation going on, and he has to put his foot down. I'm not going to say the same thing about Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe knows this Chatam Sofer. Rav Moshe is saying that with what did we call this, automation, factories and so on, you have to put your foot down. Otherwise, there won't be a Shabbat, which means I understand exactly where rabbis have to say, hold it, this is not in the spirit of the Shabbat. Where do they have to do it? When they see a risk of Shabbat slipping away. Is this an easy thing? No, it's not an easy thing. In the next couple of years, we will be in a situation that your computers and your phones and your iPads and all will be in a way. Should I tell you a secret? You don't want to hear the secret right now. Should I tell you the secret, or is it a bad thing to say? You're not breaking any Torah law by using this on Shabbat.
Using what?
An iPad on Shabbat. What Torah law are you breaking? I can't say this out loud. I say this out loud, people will quote me. What Torah law are you breaking? So can they do it in such a way that they can even separate another level, do a Shabbat switch on this? Oh, of course they could do it. Of course he can do it. Which means we're not so far away from this whole problem being so much more profound, this whole problem. So now, should a rabbi get up and say that I don't care what the phone is made of, I don't care what the situation is, I don't care if it's writing or not writing and so on, that this will take away Shabbat? So the rabbi should say it is an Avera. The rabbi should say, one second. No. The rabbi should say exactly what the Chatam Sofer said here. What was that? Somebody who does this is Machalel Shabbat Befarhesia. How did he say this? Again, I just want you to understand what he did. This person didn't break Shabbat as far as the 39 types of work. This person just in his mind did not have a day of rest. He decided it's not a day of rest. Okay, he had a little help. He had a little help with the Ramban and a little help with Yishayahu. But he decided, you keep your store open, you did not have a day of rest, you're Machalel Shabbat for Hesya, and everything that's included. But I just want you to understand, why is he going so far? Because he sees a problem. Here's where we need to put the line. And we always assume there may be multiple reasons also. Take a look at actually, I forgot to put a number here. It's right after 4, it should be 5, but it's not 5, it's 4.5. It's Rav Uziel. You know who Rav Uziel was? Yes or no? You don't know? Zeh Chamor Ma'od. Zikfer Baya, they got to you. They got to you. They got to you. If you don't know where Ruziel is, there's a problem.
Why?
Because he was the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel.
Wow. Svi Uziel.
Little? Harav Uziel. Seder. You don't know who he is, there's a problem. Yeah, he lived at he was at the same time as Rav Kook. So I'm saying, you don't know who he is, there's a problem. That means they completely cut him out. Completely cut him out. But you'll see, he was very lenient. He was very lenient on lots of things.
Why didn't they?
You have to ask. You ask. Go back in yeshiva. So why don't we learn about Rav Uziel? So listen.
He wrote things.
Yeah.
Halachot.
Yes. This is we're reading now from Piskei Uziel, right? Piskei Uziel b'shelot hazman, modern questions. L'chein yireh shegam achtam sofa lo asa elo lech kol yom haShabbat o rubo. Now, what he's referring to here, we jumped right in the middle. There was another tshuva of the Chatam Sofer. Am I allowed to get on a train on Shabbat? A train. I didn't give any money. It was paid for before, whatever. Somebody else paid, whatever. So I'm referring to, am I allowed to get on a train on Shabbat? Chatam Sofer said no also. Okay, you already know why he would say no. Over here, Rav Uziel is dealing with a different kind of a question. Somebody who, if they get on the train, they'll get to their shul, the Beit Knesset, on Shabbat. So, is he going to allow this or is he not going to allow it? But I want you to look how he approaches it. And then we're going to see that there's a whole other consideration that he has that we really didn't touch, although I was hinting at this before. He says, according to the Chatam Sofer, it's only when you spend all day on the train. Or you're going very far. So far, a person wouldn't normally go on Shabbat. Where the problem is, it's like business, or a person's going to get to the limit, how you can go on Shabbat. Or a person travels that he can be right near his business when Shabbat is over. That's certainly allowed. Not allowed. Why? Because the person did not have a day of rest. Then you're going to be on the train and bouncing all day, the way the trains were certainly in the old days, and it's exhausting and so on. That is considered that you did not have Shabbaton. Again, you didn't have Shabbat, you didn't have a day of rest. Quoting Yeshayahu. That's included in a Torah law and included in a rabbinic law as well. But then he continues, right? Onik, maskana de dina. But the conclusion is aleph. Asur l'mtzor b'kwenot hachashmilot o mechonot kitoriot shehen shel yehudim. You can't get on a train or whatever where the Jews are running it. Afilu v'nagim him lo yehudim. If a Jew owns it, even if a non-Jew runs it, that's a problem. Two, asur l'mtzor b'kwenot eila afilu im heim shel lo yehudim u'minagot al yedei lo yehudim. Even if a non-Jew owns it and a non-Jew runs it. If you're going through a Jewish area, that means he's doing it for Jews. It's a problem. But in a place where there's no Jews, Yudim mutar, like lo yudim, mutar lo yudim l'msor b'kornot shelo yehudim v'shemitnahagot al yadam b'tocha ir b'tnai shelo yitztarchu l'shalem d'mei kertis nisiyah b'shabbat v'yom. As long as you don't have to pay. V'avzot eino el l'shem hiluch shel mitzvah. If you're going to do a mitzvah, you go on l'lechet l'beit ha'kneset u'chidome. Avalo l'shem tiyul, but not just regular go around. Certainly not for business. Now, this is fascinating what he just... Now you know why you don't learn Rav Uziel. Now, this is fascinating what he just now did. Where did he draw the line? What was it? What's his line here? He started with some technical problems. It's owned by a Jew, run by a Jew, so that's just, those are side problems. Or the non-Jews are doing it for Jews, that's also a problem. There's a fellow who's a rabbi in the Hamptons, so he put a bus on the Hamptons to bring people to his shul. He probably, somebody told him about this, although it's not following it, because there it's only for the Jews. It's only for the Jews, it's a problem. So he called it a Shah bus. He allows it as a Shah bus. So Rav Uziel is certainly against that, because he says if it's being done by non-Jews for Jews, it's not okay. That's a technical problem. If you're in a hotel, and let's say the non-Jew makes coffee on Shabbat, can you drink it or not?
Yeah.
He cooked it on Shabbat, it depends. If 50% of the people in the hotel are Jews, you can't do it. If less than 50% are Jews, then you didn't do it for Jews. You did it for what was ever there.
That's the merchatz.
He cooks it anyways, whether
no,
100%.
No. He cooks it for... So again, let's say there are only Jews in the hotel, and he cooks it for you. Can you drink it? No, because he cooked it for Jews. So I'll say it again. There is a rabbinic law that you can't use something if a non-Jew did it for Jews. How do you define if he did it for Jews? If 50% are Jews, you can't do it. That's all, 50%. 49%, you can do it. Simple math, simple numbers. So that was part of what he threw in here in the middle. But what else did he do here? He drew an incredible distinction between the application of this law from one case to the other. If you're driving on the train so that the second day after Shabbat you'll be right near your business, you can't do it. But if I'm driving on the train to go to shul or to do a mitzvah, I can do it. Hold it, what's the difference? So this goes back to what you said before, and he's saying the opposite. Is it the action isn't allowed, the pu'ula is not allowed, or is the totality of the result which is the problem? He seems to be understanding the problem is one of totality. Did I have a Shabbat or not have a Shabbat? If I just get on the train, I'm riding on a train, going on a tiyul, I didn't have a Shabbat. He's claiming, if I go to shul, again, all the technical problems solved. It's not owned by a Jew. It's not being run by a Jew. They're not doing done for Jews. I'm not paying money. Right? All the technical problems are solved. So he said, so did I have a Shabbat or not have a Shabbat? So what would he say? I'm going to shul, so I had a Shabbat. Which means he seems to be understanding the problem of Shabbaton, of a day of, did I have a day of rest or not? So it's very interesting. How far is this? Again, it's different from Rav Moshe. How far is this from Rav Moshe by saying, okay, you can use it for lights, but you can't use it for other things. Why can't I use it for lights? Because lights enhance my Shabbat. Why can't I use it for my television? Because it doesn't enhance my Shabbat. So it seems to be that he's saying, can I get on a train or not? So it's not yes or no. That's what's really interesting. It's not yes or no, can I get on a train? It depends. Where are you going on the train? Which means he seems to be asking the bigger question. Do I have a day of rest or not? If I have a day of rest, then this particular action is okay. If I don't have a day of rest, then this particular action is not okay. Which is, he seems to be less looking at the action than looking at the totality of what emerges from it. Yeah. Is that interesting? One second. Is that interesting? So I'm going to say no, but that's a much more interesting question according to Rav Uziel. That's a much more interesting question. I agree because then, okay, where do you draw the line? Because he seems not to be focusing on actions, because I can't be in action anymore according to him. The exact same train, if I'm going to business, it's not allowed. If I'm going to shul, it is allowed. How can that be? So the question is no. The question is, meaning, what he's saying actually makes sense, and I hinted at this in the Ramban before. What did the Ramban say? If you do this all day, you won't have a Shabbat. Would the Ramban necessarily say, I can't trade my apple for an orange? He wouldn't necessarily say that, because that didn't ruin my Shabbat. I can say the opposite again, which is I'm sitting in the store, and all day I'm trading apples for oranges. That ruins my Shabbat. If I'm sitting at home, I need an orange, and you need an apple, and we trade. So what did I do wrong here? You understand what I'm saying? That's what I hinted at the very beginning. Is this a question of actions, or is this a question of what kind of day I ended up having? You take a look at the next source. Is also somebody, source 5, somebody who was also a chief rabbi of Israel. He's asked a question regarding what to do in a prison regarding who should cook on Shabbat. The rabbi who asked him, yeah, The Hichli Yitzchak is Rabbi Herzog. Rabbi Herzog was the chief rabbi of Israel. Today, the head of labor, Yitzchak Herzog, is named for him. It's his grandson who's named for him, same name. This Rabbi Herzog had two sons.
Really?
Yeah, this Rabbi Herzog had two sons. One was named Chaim, who was named after Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. The other's name was Yaakov David, who was named after the Ridvaz. The one named after Ridvaz was a huge Talmid Chacham, who became he died very young. He became ambassador. He was offered at the same time to become ambassador to Canada or chief rabbi of England. And he took the job of Israeli ambassador. He wanted to be connected to Israel. Anyway, this man today, Yitzchak Herzog, is named for this fellow, Heichal Yitzchak, who was the chief rabbi as well. In source number 5, Sheila. Im yesh lam tzo heter bibishul yidei nochrim bishabbat, kidei lemnoa michilul shabbat diyoraita, hanasa yidei yudim, v'kidei sheyuchlu gam shomrei shabbat leyanot mibishul ze. Tshuva lagon Rav Agon Rav Dov Eliezerov Rav Lamachane Atzurim. So this Rabbi Eliezerov, I remember him still. I met him a number of times. He gave me one of his books once. He was the rabbi of the prisons, of various prisons. He was also the head of the kollel in the yeshiva Keren Beyavna, and he was the rabbi in the area called Katamon. So he writes here, Ein latir isur d'rabanan b'kviut k'dei sheyimaneh mi'isur d'raita. He goes, you can't allow, notice the word kviut. You can't create a situation that all the time you're breaking the rabbinic law, and then look, I'm skipping a little bit there, but the next line by you, v'libi rochash devar chadash. And he goes, I have a sense of something else, something new. Masha malacha yedei goyim hu rak d'rabanan, zeh rak ba'akrai. When we say that if a non-Jew does work for you on Shabbat, that's only when it's occasional. Ve'eza pula yechida, when he does one individual action. Aval sheyeh adam oseh ayedei goy et melachto hakfua v'rigila, if sharshizo isur midiraita. So it's fascinating. He got right back to the same Ramban. Ukmosha kotav Ramban, and he mekach umemkar. Shadu machzik chanuto patuach b'shabbat kivachol over al mitzvat aseh shel Shabbat. So what is he saying here? He's saying if every now and again I ask somebody to do something to me, I still have a Shabbat, but they did one action for me. But if I have a permanent situation doing action for me, so what's ended up happening? I'm having work done on Shabbat. This is not so far from Rav Moshe, but explains the situation much more. It's not so far from Rav Moshe as saying, but you're not going to have a Shabbat. Rav Moshe was concerned about it, and they would have not allowed it. He says, oh, yeah, I think that this is included as well. We'll do one last thing for today, and that's source number 6. And source number 6 is dealing, it's the Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Waldenberg. He also lived not that long ago. He was he sat next to, together on the Beit Din HaGadol with Rav Avadya. The two of them were very, very close. And here he deals with the question of riding a bicycle on Shabbat. So let's start with that. Are you allowed to ride a bicycle on Shabbat? Excuse me?
There's an
Eruv. So there's one posek who is lenient, the Ben Ishchai.
Yeah.
The Ben Ishchai. A horse is drabanan that you may pull off a branch to hit the horse. So there's drabanan. So there's any kind of drabanan over here. So the Ben Ishchai, when so good. So the Ben Ishchai was asked about this, and he was asked about the community in India. Be allowed to drive a bicycle on Shabbat. By the way, if you look at his tshuva, he's not as lenient as people think he is. I was shocked the first time I went to deal for Shabbat. Everybody's on bicycles and going to shul. Everybody's on bicycles and so on Shabbat, but not only going to shul. Let's be honest.
No, of course.
Okay, I'd say of course. I'd say some are going. You see people in suits with the talit on the way. They're going to.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean
you go to Erlinger.
Right.
To go play tennis.
Okay. So he's dealing with the question of a bicycle, and he writes. תשובה לחכם אחד רכיבה על אופניים בשבת, מה ששלוני על דות רכיבה על אופניים בשבת, הנה אמנם בשוט רב פעילים, that's the Ben Ishchai, חלק אל, so one כותב צדים להתר, he gives certain reasons to be lenient, זה ביות שמלאך מלאב על ידי אדם היושב בו ודוחה את הגלגלים ברגליו אין שם, and so on. אבל אני את עתי יש מקום לדון לדחות כל דבריו שם בזה, it seems to me you can completely throw out everything he said, I've already written this in other places. And he goes back to the case of the train. And hatchum. Gimel ta'amim, I see three reasons not to allow it. One, gzeirah shema yotzei chutz latchum. Maybe you'll go outside of where you're allowed to go on Shabbat. So you can argue if you think that's a good thing. Maybe you can't walk for the same reason. Although he'll argue back, no, there's a big difference. When you walk, you don't walk as far. You drive, you can get great distances in less time. But okay, you can argue about his first reason. Second, mishum uvdin dechol, it becomes like a weekday activity. Vishvut yoraita bezeh, de eino shovet, vegufo na venad. Look what he just now did. He took the Chtam Sofer by keeping your stores open, took the Ramban that you need to have a Shabbat, and he just now applied it to bicycle. Now, I'm going to ask you again. Is this a very simple application? It's not a simple application. I'll just read his third thing, and I'll come back to the second. The third thing, Yesh B'zeh Gzera Shami Takein Mana. Maybe it'll break, and you'll have to fix it. The thing breaks, or this breaks, or whatever, and then you have to fix it, and people fix bicycles all the time. So I asked my friend in Deal that I was staying with, I said, what happens if it breaks? He goes, you leave it on the side and get it after Shabbat. We'll buy a new one. I mean, so it didn't bother him at all. He says, no, you don't fix it, you just leave it. Who fixes a bicycle? Anyway, but his second reason is interesting. Look what he just now did. He took the same exact argument of the Chatam Sofer. Where did the Chatam Sofer use it? Can have your store open on Shabbat. You there working on Shabbat. And what will be, you'll have no Shabbat whatsoever. And he applied it to bicycle. Now, can you argue with this? Of course you can argue with this.
You go to the shul,
of course you can argue. Right, so what did you just now do? You took the logic of Rav Uziel. And what did Rav Uziel say? Hold it, I can get on the train if I'm going to shul. Again, all the technical things aside. So what are we really seeing here? Again, I think, what do we really see now? We look at this whole thing, what do we see? We see that this category, it's not in the spirit of Shabbat. First of all, it's not some little thing that somebody made up. Not in the spirit of Shabbat is probably, at least according to the Ramban, the Chatam Sofer, and we see lots of others, it's a Torah-level law. The biggest, you know, the most extreme application is the Chatam Sofer saying that if you have your store open, you're considered to be a Mechalel Shabbat on a Torah level. That's unbelievable that he can say that. It's unbelievable. But I understand what he's doing. He's claiming that this is exactly the Ramban. At the end of the day, you didn't have a Shabbat. Now the question is, and I'll say it again, does this apply to individual actions, or does this apply to the whole total experience of the day? The Chatam Sofer certainly applied it to the whole experience of the day when he's talking about keeping the stores open. The question is, do I apply it to individual actions? You know, again, I can just say all the time, somebody asked me, my kid wants to use a kite. Can I fly a kite on Shabbat? So I'm telling you, I didn't look into it all. I don't know. I was worried maybe you make knots on it, you fix knots, so it gets torn, you get ripped. And I was thinking about the tchum, is it outside of the tchum, whatever. But of course, the easiest thing to say is, no, it's not in the spirit of Shabbat. No, but again, I don't feel so good saying that. Who said it's not in the spirit of Shabbat? Okay, but that's what happens. Anything that some parent doesn't want their kids to do, if they're religious, what do they tell them? It's not in the spirit of Shabbat, and therefore it's not. But I don't think it's an easy thing to apply. Now, I'm going to say two opposite things. One is I think that sometimes people use this too easily. None of the spirit of Shabbat, you can't do it. And I think, on the other hand, that the rabbis have a responsibility of using this law and making applications. In every generation, they need to application. They need to be very smart and with their eyes wide open and looking at the situation going on and then determining, will my community have more of a Shabbat if they do this particular action? Or will my community have less of a Shabbat if they do this particular action? That becomes the question. If they're going to have less of a Shabbat, what's the law? Yom Minucha. Did this give me a Yom Minucha or not? By the way, people ride their bicycles. Did that give them Minucha or not give them Minucha? Did it give them Minucha or did not give them Minucha? Do they have a day of Minucha or not a day of Minucha? It's hard to answer, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's hard to answer. Right? It's hard to answer. Which, again, I'm not dealing with the. Maybe they're right, those who say it'll break and you have to fix it. And so maybe that's right. They say you can't play a musical instrument, a guitar, because the string may break. So you know the answer. So you know the answer to that, man. So by the way, I would feel very, very. I would find it very difficult to allow a bicycle. I'm not a Sfaradi posek. I saw the Ben Ish Chai. He's not, you know, embracing it with two hands and saying absolutely. It's very, very limited. The most I would ever allow, if I would answer for a Sfaradi, is to say, if in your community this is done to drive to shul, you can use it to drive to shul, but you can't use it in other places. But I'll say it again, I feel very uncomfortable saying that, and I think most of the rabbis in DL also don't allow it. The rabbis don't allow it, but all the people do it. So, right? Am I right about that?
No, I'm not sure.
Did any rabbi get up and say, yes, this is 100% fine?
I think so.
You have to let me know who said that, because that's far more interesting. And what they would do, but the reason for that would be one of two reasons. One is to say, oh, the Ben Ish Chai said. The other reason, this is what we've been doing. This is our custom. And and what would they then say the next line? This doesn't take away from Shabbat. This gives us a Shabbat. But that, to me, is a larger question over here. That's the larger question. Do you have a Shabbat or not have a Shabbat? Is it an action or is it an entire feeling of the day? If the entire feeling of the day is lost, then there's no question whatsoever, at least according to the Rabbanan Chatam Sofer, what do we have over here? You broke a Torah law. How severe is that? That Torah law, the Chatam Sofer even argued you considered Machalel Shabbat with everything included. The same thing as the guy who cooks and smokes and drives the car and everything else. That's considered to be Machalel Shabbat. That's a very, very extreme application. Does it apply to individual things? So therefore we saw this remarkable tshuva of Rav Uziel saying, you can get on a train because you don't pay, you don't this, you don't do this. Again, all of his considerations, but you're going to shul on Shabbat, so he was willing to allow that. Yeah. But we'll just 1 second. And why would he allow it? Because he would say, you have a Shabbat. This didn't take away from Shabbat. You had a Shabbat. That becomes the larger question. It took away from Shabbat or enhanced the Shabbat? But according to the Ramban, arguably, if I moved a box of Gemarot, if I moved all my Gemarot from here to over there, and all day I'm moving books and moving books, I had nothing muksa, according to him, and you didn't have a Shabbat that day. And you broke the positive mitzvah, the mitzvah to say, Lishbot, Lenuach. You didn't rest on Shabbat. By the way, at the end of every Shabbat, I speak around 5 times every Shabbat. By the time Shabbat is over, I'm completely exhausted. So every time Shabbat is over, I sit down, I have a nice comfortable chair, I sit there, I say to my wife, I'm exhausted. And she looks at me like I'm an idiot. She goes, you're exhausted. I've been. So the truth is, we're both tired by the time Shabbat's over.